Good morning, Parish Orphans and Retrogrades. Timothy Gordon here with exciting news from a neighbor state of mine here in Mississippi. In Texas, a heartbeat law goes into effect today. It was signed in May by Governor Abbott, but it goes into effect today, September the 1st. What does this mean, Parish Orphans and Retrogrades? I'll give you the skeletal facts of the thing in 1 second. And I'm going to tell you what the implications are. It's not an absolute victory, but as of right now, it's safe to title this video and to view this video under the heading abortion ban in Texas. Here's why. It's an abortion law that is one of the so-called heartbeat laws, a species of that genus. It bans abortions after 6 weeks gestation. That is getting very young. This is the vast majority of all clinically noted pregnancies. If those of us who have had several kids, or our wives anyway, when men can't have kids, we know that most pregnancies aren't even detected before the 6, 7, 8 weeks mark. This is a big, big deal. And this case comes down. The constitutionality can later be challenged if an abortionist does get sued. I'm going to give you the particulars in half a second, but that can happen later. This inaction on the part of the court before today, which was prayed for, hoped for, expected by abortion-loving, child-murdering abortion clinics and abortion supporters, it occurs as SCOTUS prepares to hear a Roe versus Wade challenge from my state, Mississippi, later in this year. It'll be in the next term. The argumentation will be expected to happen just a little bit later in the fall. So what are the implications? I'm going to explain that to you in just a minute. First, I'd like to call everyone's attention to timothyjgordon.com and the Retrograde Classical Academy that can be enrolled for there. timothyjgordon.com, click enroll. Today, later in the afternoon, is the start of classes. And we have more classes than I offered all of last year, all of last fall, spring, and summer. I offered 2 courses at a time. It was pretty much only adult ed. The change to Retrograde Classical Academy, which is now opening in full force. 7 classes are offered: Latin, Algebra 1, which are largely homeschoolers' classes, Catholic social teaching, scripture, then some of the standards, U.S. history, church history, and Aristotle's Nicomachean Ethics. These can be a mix of adult ed and aid for homeschooling ed. That's how they've been used in the past. I'm not teaching all of them. I have some amazing teachers that are taking some of the classes. I'm taking 2 of them. It's going to be exciting. I'm teaching Latin. Everyone should be learning this. If you want to defend against the motu proprio, learn the ecclesiastical language, Latin. And that's what we're teaching. It's not classical Latin. It's ecclesiastical. It's an exciting time to be a Catholic. It's a necessary time to pull your kids out of both public and Catholic education. Public schools, that's 100% of the cases. Catholic schools, that's 99 or 98% of the cases. Enroll your kids in some sort of homeschooling curriculum or just do it yourself today. And we'll help you do that. A lot of people are on the fence. Go to timothyjgordon.com and click enroll. Today is the first day of classes. You can enroll after today. Some of my classes begin next week, but September the 1st is the start of the school year. And if you want to start from the very jump, enroll today. Also, I've been telling you guys, when we have this small lull in government activity, the aggression of Biden has been checked from his first 100 days in office. He's been beaten back. He's going to wind up the most unpopular president in American history. Look what's happened in Afghanistan debacle. So there's going to be some breathing room for conservatives after the first 100 days of this administration. With that, take the next 6 months and get out of your blue state, folks. If you can do it, if it's at all possible, get to a red state like I did. I went from California to Mississippi, the bluest of the blue to the reddest of the red. Go to realestateforlife.org. They will help to make this ginormous headache a smaller headache. And life is a game of numbers, so you can't make the headache go away, but they can make it much easier. And it's a pro-life organization, mostly Catholic. Go to realestateforlife.org. www.thehardbeatlaw.org. Okay. So what are we talking about today? A heartbeat law in Texas signed by Governor Abbott back in May that goes into effect today, September the 1st. It's very exciting because it stands for the proposition that private citizens, get this, private citizens can sue abortion providers civilly to the tune of $10,000 a pop if those abortion providers abort fetuses at or after 6 weeks gestation. That is very young. It basically means 99.9% of pregnancies. Very few women know they're pregnant before 6 weeks. It's very rare. Private citizens, by my read of this thing, my initial read of the law, it looks like basically anyone has something called standing at court to sue. Not even the mothers who go to the abortion clinic to have their baby aborted and murdered, right? That you don't have to be related. It sounds like any private citizens can sue abortion providers to the tune of $10,000 if they abort after the 6 week mark. Listen to the immediate effect this is already having. Very gratifying. This is a very rare conservative victory. I'm cautiously optimistic on how the court will treat it later this term when they rule on the Mississippi abortion case. Since mid-August, all 11 of the Planned Parenthood health centers in Texas that provide abortion services have stopped scheduling visits after September the 1st for abortions past 6 weeks of pregnancy, which is almost all of them. This is reported by NBC. I'm reading from an article up today on thefederalist.com. The vast majority of people who obtain an abortion in Texas are at least 6 weeks pregnant. Vast majority. No one knows they're pregnant before 6 weeks. Steph has never known she was pregnant before 6 weeks, and she's been pregnant like a million times. With my children. We have a million children together. Thefederalist.com continues, this isn't necessarily the final word, as abortionists or their facilities could still challenge the constitutionality of the law if someone sues them. That would come and they'd have to file, they'd have to petition, run it all the way up the jurisprudential flagpole. If it gets to SCOTUS, then, you know, SCOTUS would have to grant certiorari, which means that minority majority of the 9 justices were interested in hearing it. That would be four required to grant cert. And I used to get it mixed up and say 3. It's 4 required to grant cert. And then they'd hear it probably in a couple terms or something, 2022. It doesn't really matter because upcoming on the docket with argumentation probably to begin in a month or so is the Mississippi case, which criminalizes it. It doesn't civilly outlaw it. It criminally outlaws not something as beautiful and ambitious as 6 weeks of gestation and above. This is 15 weeks of gestation and above, which is much earlier than it's been, but still not as ambitious as you'd like from Mississippi. Next year, thefederalist.com continues, the Supreme Court will issue a ruling over Mississippi's 15-week abortion ban with arguments expected this fall. Pro-life advocates expect the case to overturn the nearly 50-year precedent established in Roe versus Wade after a 6-3 conservative majority was established on the court last fall. In October, Justice Amy Coney Barrett replaced longtime Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away from complications with metastatic pancreatic cancer. This is an article up today by Tristan Justice, who is the Western correspondent for The Federalist. Perfect name, right? It's like an ice cream man being named Cone. Tristan Justice. Man, you were probably selected just for your name. The article is called Supreme Court Protects Babies with Heartbeats by Allowing Texas's 6-week abortion plan. Up today on The Federalist. Good job, Tristan Justice. Ice cream man Cone. That's a good article. So here's the dealio with Amy Coney Barrett. I love this article. I love the news. I am cautiously optimistic. Some have criticized, you know, pre-celebration of this simply because it was inaction that abortion-loving murderers had petitioned the court to take preemptive action, the SCOTUS, to take preemptive action, which they can do prior to the laws going into effect today, September the 1st, and it's inaction by the court. The inaction occurs, again, as the article pointed out, as the Supreme Court prepares to hear the Roe challenge later this year. So they might be just declining to get involved so that they'll divert all their resources and not tip their hand. SCOTUS does not like to tip its hand when a case is on the docket like this. And, you know, look, this so-called 6-3 conservative majority is mythic. It's mythic. So I am not nearly so optimistic about the actual case that they're going to hear argumentation on this fall, the Mississippi case, because we have two legitimate conservatives on the bench. Justice Thomas, a Catholic, amazing Justice Thomas, natural law loving Justice Thomas. He talks about the natural law in lots of his different handings down. He's challenged the legal theory for the basis of incorporation doctrine, right? He said, is this due process clause basis, or is this an equal protection clause basis? You guys probably don't know what that means, but the point, he challenges really fundamental liberal doctrine, legal doctrine, that other conservatives on the bench don't bother to challenge. Justice Thomas is the freaking man. He's very Catholic. He's obsessed with natural law. He lectures on the natural law at law schools around the country. I had the chance to meet him as FedSoc president 2 years in a row. And I was just, it's crazy stuff with Abby. And I didn't want to hop on a plane to DC, but he's an amazing, amazing mind and amazing man. Very, very interesting story. Now, and the other true conservative on the court is the one they call Silent Sam Alito. I went to law school and studied under Professor Roy Brooks, who was at law school with, I think it was Bill Hill and Silent Sam Alito, all within 2 years or something at the law school. And he just said they always called him Silent Sam, but he is so, so truly conservative. Now, the other 6-3, this is funny to even, I'm not even going to mention the other one, but Trump's three picks here, right? Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett are not conservative. Okay, so they are not conservatives. I told you this at the time, specifically on a case called Jacobson. And the cases that follow on Jacobson in that line of black letter law, based on the holding of black letter law in Jacobson, which doesn't have much to do with the fact pattern, we call that progeny. The progeny of Jacobson is bad. I warned you about Amy Coney Barrett being bad on Jacobson in Jacobson versus Massachusetts, which is a case from 1905, is a Supreme Court decision which raised questions about the power of state government to protect the public health, the public's health, and constitution protection of personal liberty. Lots of folks attribute to it this famous 1940s forced sterilization case. They forced a lady to get sterilized. A lot of them ascribe to it the problems with the Supreme Court standing up really strong against forced Maxine Cumming. And this was all in the air. It hung in the ether as Amy Coney Barrett was being vetted last fall after Ruth Ginsburg, the Wicked Witch of the West, died. And so I was telling you guys, a lot of you got mad. Oh, she's Catholic. She's Catholic. She's Catholic. Okay, she's a big supporter of Jacobson. This is not likely to go the way you want it on the jab. Neither Barrett nor Gorsuch nor Kavanaugh went the way any of us expected, because they were Trump's pick on even the initial challenge, I think, in Florida of the election. So that was a knife in the back, and people began getting right then, oh, Tim's right on this. I don't tend to make predictions unless I'm quite certain. Unless we have good either intuited or informational security that I can't necessarily fully substantiate. Just trust me on this. I don't go around saying I guarantee Trump victory. I've foreseen it in a dream or whatever, like some Some of us on the Catholic right tend to make big sweeping predictions and they don't come true. Got a pretty good track record with this. Anyway, this is not about me. This is about little babies in the womb who are now finally getting the attention they deserve. And let me just say this, folks. This emergency petition that was challenged, that challenged the law that goes into effect today, September the 1st, challenged by abortion lovers in Texas, that it failed because the court was inactive. It did not stop this law. So as of today, you basically can't get an abortion in Texas at 6 weeks gestation. That's so lovely. This flies in the face of Roe jurisprudence, which made it illegal for any of the 50 states to make abortion illegal. Do you understand that? Roe did not make abortion legal. It made it illegal for any of the 50 states to make it illegal. Five states in the South started passing laws to challenge this last year, including my new state, Mississippi. Mississippi's state law, which banned abortions criminally above 15 weeks, lovely, should go all the way down to 0 weeks. But criminally, unlike the thing we're talking about in Texas today, which only is a civil suit, still preventive because they don't want to get sued for $10,000, abortion providers. But Mississippi brought laws that do challenge Roe on its face, that basically ignore Roe. If this goes in a certain chronological order, then this would be what I've been telling you about, nullification. This is the one way that we can challenge the federal government. I've been in contact with, you know, the 10th Amendment Center. I've been telling you about nullification, which they say often leads to secession, for about a year and a half now. It's the best option. You move to a really red state. It's the reason you move to a red state, aside from the fact that you don't want commie neighbors. But you move to a red state so that you could petition your governor and the state legislature, no matter what federal orders come down the pike, we nullify them the way they were nullifying Tyrant Lincoln in the Civil War. And yes, you know, there's a more interesting case to be made there because slavery was a grave moral evil, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about states' rights and the way that the Confederacy was right. It wasn't right about the particular issue of slavery, but they were right about states' rights. And that's what we're getting back to. And that's what we're getting back to now. Note, the southern states, folks, let me say this one time. So turn up your cameras, record me saying this, put it on Twitter. The southern states in 1861 had the right ideas about scope of government, American federalism, subsidiarity. They had the right ideas. Local action is the only way to combat Marxism and globalism. But they were standing up for the total wrong issue, slavery, right? So I'm going to do some shows on Lincoln, showing what a Marxist tyrant he was, coming up soon here. But I'm not saying he was wrong about slavery itself, which he didn't really care much about till it became politicized. However, the same southern states, almost to the state, the same southern states in 2020 and 2021 are standing up for states' rights, subsidiarity, federalism, localism, whatever you want to call it. It's all the same stuff. The federal government can't tell us what to do. The state legislatures are supposed to do so. It's in the Constitution, in Article 1, Section 8. We're standing up for the real meaning of this country's amazing subsidiarian constitution, Article 1, Section 8, for the first time. But unlike the same southern states which did it 160 years ago, now we're doing it with the moral force of the right impetus, the right reason. The same southern states were standing up for states' rights, which are correct, for a wrong reason, slavery before, and America suffered by it. America became a non-republic after the Civil War. Lincoln turned us into a ginormous Leviathan socialist state. He really did. And we've been paying for it with our blood, with taxation, with immorality, the most important one. But now, 160 years later, we can reverse it by the same states starting out suing at court, nullifying unjust abortion legislation, and they're doing it on the same moral and really legal basis, except they're right now. States' rights in the Civil War, but they did it for the wrong issue, slavery. States' rights now on the right side of an even bigger issue than slavery, abortion. Far more important issue, infinitely more important. They're both grave moral evils, slavery and abortion, but abortion is infinitely bigger morally, infinitely more important to moral theology. Do you understand? So this is the time. The time is now. This is why you get to a red state like I've done. You get out of California, you get to someplace like Mississippi or Alabama or Louisiana, which was another one of the states challenging it. Texas. I lived in Texas a third of my life. I'm not a huge fan of the state, but politically it's much, much saner. Much, much saner. And look what they did today. It's very exciting. Now, I'm cautiously optimistic because conservatives, one thing I know about us, we always lose. So SCOTUS might have stood down today just because they've got these new liberals in conservative robes, wolves in sheep's clothes, like Amy Coney Barrett, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, to build this false sense of triumphalism and a fake sense of insecurity on the left, but a false sense of triumphalism among Americans who support conservative jurists. And I think they might overturn the Mississippi case. I'm not cautiously optimistic about that. So that means that the whole House of Cards is set to fall. They're in inactivity on the Texas law, which takes effect today, September the 1st, might just be a setup for an overturn of all of these abortion cases, which are coming down the pipe, that are on the docket. So that I realize that's a lot of information. But don't start celebrating yet. There is something real to celebrate, that between now and whenever the court issues at the next term its verdict on the Mississippi case, at least till then, expect the Texas law to be sacrosanct. All of September, all of October, all of November, maybe we'll get the handing sometime in December or January. There are going to be basically none or very few abortions happening at those 11 abortion facilities throughout the state of Texas, which is one of the biggest states.
Do you think that's why they waited to rule on this? Is because they're waiting to lower the hammer with Mississippi?
Yeah, because remember, yes, I'm a little worried about it. I don't know which way they're going to come out there. I wouldn't make a prediction. I'm just saying don't be excited when you see a 6-3 constitutional conservative majority. That's nonsense, right? We got two conservatives on the bench, and I told you, I've been telling you for a year and a half. But what they may do is, remember what happens when the Supreme Court, you know, which is a representative, one of the three branches of the federal government, when they make law from the bench, which is not even what they're supposed to be doing. They're supposed to only be interpreting whether or not a law, whether they like it or not, at the state level or the federal level, is consistent with the federal constitution. That's not what they do anymore. They adjudicate whether they like a law or not, and they basically make up law out of whole cloth from the bench. This is the whole trick that the 14th Amendment, passed after the Civil War, it's basically Lincoln's homage, began to do, to ruin the real constitution, to make America a Leviathan liberal nation from the Civil War to afterwards, whereas before it was a little subsidiary and kind of league of tiny states that all decided for themselves. But what it does with things like Roe versus Wade is it makes quote unquote law. It made a new over law over all 50 states, Roe versus Wade did. And it wasn't a law that came through the Congress. It was judge made law, where they said, because of Roe, we're saying not just the petitioner in this state, but in all 50 states. Now it's illegal for any of the states to make abortion illegal. The age of viability then was in the middle 20, 26 weeks, 24 weeks, something like that. Super old. And of course, the age of viability of a fetus is dropped. And so even by the holding of Roe, the age of illegality to abort a fetus should be much younger, which would have saved millions of lives. But they don't care. They make up stuff from the bench. This is why the central government is supposed to have very little sexy power. It's what the 10th Amendment stands for. The states have the police power, the power to make laws that regulate health, safety, welfare, morals, and security. The federal government only has Article 1, Section 8 powers, but that's been eviscerated by the 14th Amendment. I'm going to do a show explaining all this because I know people don't, particularly Catholics, don't study the Constitution at all. They're buying into some really ignorant tropes about, just don't even bother to read the Constitution. It's this evil document written by Beelzebub himself. I mean, it's really bad. You have to know it because it's the law of the land and it's where we live. And I happen to know the Constitution really, really well. Spent many years of my life studying it. So the takeaway, the upshot, this is a win because very few babies will be killed in Texas, one of the largest states, between now and Christmas because of this 6-week heartbeat law that isn't even a criminal law. It's a civil law. Gives private citizens the ability to sue abortion providers to the tune of $10,000 per abortion. And we've already seen how they're reacting to it. They're not going to do it. The inaction on the part of SCOTUS is what I'm saying to be cautiously optimistic about. The implications of the inactivity of SCOTUS remain indefinite for now, because we'll be told when they rule on the Mississippi case whether or not this 6-3 conservative majority is going to be conservative on Roe jurisprudence, which is related to the creepy Jacobson jurisprudence. It is related. And that's where you'd expect Amy Coney Barrett and Gorsuch and Kavanaugh to be bad. Okay. God bless us, though. We should say a prayer of thanksgiving for the babies that'll be saved between now and Christmas. Glory be to the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, as it was in the beginning, it is now, and ever shall be, a world without end. Amen. Good stuff. Good stuff for today. Y'all, I will take questions.
Somebody's asking your thoughts on the 19th Amendment.
Oh, I mean, you know, you're probably asking because I have the case for patriarchy coming out. I'd say this is mainly a picture thinking issue for, I mean, you could probably guess what my thoughts are and would have been if I were alive in the year of the ratification of the 19th Amendment. I'm not going to surprise you there. But now it's more a picture thinking question. There's something called ratchet effect in law. Once you get an entitlement from the state, it doesn't go back. So it's mainly noise to talk about. The point that I make in case for patriarchy is, look, if men, patriarchs, took over their homes again, and they're actually teaching the priestly, prophetly, kingly office of the teacher in the home, then you're just going to double up on, you'd basically be doubling up on your vote anyway, right? I mean, every year, Steph and I just double a vote one way or the other. You're going to agree and you're not going to favor. There's really only one way to vote each election for someone that takes Christianity seriously, takes the patriarchy seriously, and a wife, you know, assuming that right to vote because of the ratchet effect is not going away for all adults, aside from felons and a few others, men and women included, then it's like, that's if you're doing your duty as a husband, a patriarch, right, then you would just have an assured basically double up of the vote, partly because it's a long-term proposition. You're just going to agree about all these obvious things. I mean, I don't understand how a marriage works, just to give an example, where a man is anti-abortion and a woman's pro-abortion, or vice versa. But let's take it as a so-called women's issue, right? It's not. It's a baby's issue where murderous women are murdering babies to the tune of millions. But I mean, how does a marriage like that work? How is that not like a legal nullity? If you can't even agree whether or not it's murder to kill a child, you know, that you might conceive together. Oh, no, that's just a clump of cells or whatever, which has been struck down by science. It's biologically alive and it's human. That's a little baby. If you can't even agree about that, that marriage is probably a legal nullity. So like if the husband and wife aren't voting the same way It's not like you're voting on what's the best color, right? Which are things in issue where reasonable minds can differ. I'm not saying all husbands and wives have to have every position the same, but I know there are some of you out there that have these marriages that got married when you're young and have a troubled marriage. But if you're not voting the same way on such issues as, can a man be a woman? Can a man really marry a man, like Prop 8 in California a decade and a half ago? Should mothers be able to hire doctors to kill their babies, especially without the consent of the fathers or any time? Those are basically sham marriages, right? I mean, I don't know how else to say it. So if you have a wife that exercises her right to vote, or if you are a wife who's exercising her right to vote, it's, if we're talking about Catholics, faithful Catholics who are the viewers, the parish orphans and retrogrades, then we're probably talking about women that just double up their husband's vote anyway. So that's the issue for Catholics in the 19th Amendment, right? That's definitely not going back. Entitlements don't go back. That's how the ratchet effect works. We'll take super chat questions first, by the way. That we probably should say that more. Any other?
I think somebody's commenting that more people should read the Federalist Papers. It's sad how many people think we were founded on ideas of, quote, democracy.
Sure. Well, I mean, so this is something that because the Straussians run the few conservative places in academia, they are conservative, but they're a type of conservative, the Straussians. It's funny to me that at places like Hillsdale College or Claremont, they're like, we're going to educate your kids in the true founding. And they have them read the Federalist Papers, which are written by John Jay, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, mainly Madison and Hamilton, because John Jay got sick after he wrote like Federalist Six. But they have them read the Federalist Papers, which were publications over a span of time in a New York Gazette that were being responded to by the anti-federalists, who were those who were either moderately or radically, there are a couple groups of anti-federalists, against the ratification of the Constitution for some really, really scholarly good reasons. And the anti-federalists were a bunch of future presidents like James Monroe. And, you know, there are other amazing minds like George Clinton of New York. The Lee family was all anti-federalist. And so when conservatives start extolling the virtue of Federalist Papers, yes, we should read the important Federalist Papers, 10, 39, 51, 78, the biggies that they tend to do at the Straussian conservative places like Hillsdale or University of Dallas or Claremont. But it's idiotic to read only one half of the argument. The anti-federalists, particularly the writings of Brutus, particularly Brutus's fourth, fifth, and sixth letter, responding to Madison in Federalists 10 and 39, we now have the luxury of history looking back and saying, oh, Brutus was right. Madison saying in 10 and 31, 39 and 51, oh, we could do this. We can make a really, really big republic, a continent-sized republic that won't become like an empire, will function like a small little republic, subsidiarity. And Brutus is like, no, here's why. Here's where in Article 1, Section 8, the leak in the boat is. Here's where in Article 3, on the judiciary, here's the leak in the boat. Here's in Article 2, there are a few leaks in the boat on the president he thought would happen that didn't. But everything he says about Article 1 and Article 3, this is the anti-federalist Brutus, turned out correct. And we see it. Oh, the necessary and proper clause. They use it exactly how Brutus says they would in his fourth and fifth letters. They use the commerce power in Article 1, Section 8, the exact way Brutus said that they would. They use judicial review exactly as Cato, another anti-federalist. They all wrote pseudonymously. Cato in his fourth letter talks about how in Federalist 78, which was written by Hamilton, the power of judicial review would be abused. And we just look back and we're like, that's exactly what they did. It looks like the progressives from Lincoln through FDR, through, you know, just admirers of Karl Marx, who took over this country after the Civil War, like Lincoln, you know, Theodore Roosevelt, Wilson, FDR, legacy through Obama, how they destroyed states' rights, how they hated subsidiarity. This is why Pius IX was so, so personally sympathetic to the Confederacy, was because the Italian unification was happening. He's like, this is the liberalism I'm talking about. Pius IX, who published the Syllabus of Errors, published it against this creeping liberalism and this big government, big expanse, unify Italy, which he hated, over the Papal States. Pius IX associated himself with the Confederacy personally because he's like, look, I don't like this big, creeping, big government, continent-sized republic. That's a nonsense. There's no such thing. Republics have to be geographically small. First rule of Montesquieu. They have to be small. So he wanted the Papal States to be separate from the unification of Italy. And he, this is why he sent such a really, really sympathetic letter to Jefferson Davis, calling him most honorable president. He's the only head of state around the whole world. Pius IX, who hated liberals like Lincoln, like those who unified Italy, made it a big, sweeping, modern new nation that's the size of a whole boot-sized peninsula, boot-shaped peninsula. America was too big. It is too big. And Pius IX loved Jefferson Davis and the Confederacy. He expressed publicly deep sympathy. I think privately he had even more, because he identified the Papal States in this one way with the Confederacy. You know, look, we don't want a big liberal continent-sized thing. We need, you know, smaller is beautiful. So Pius IX, you can go read his letter he wrote to Jefferson Davis, where he's the only head of state around the entire world because he hated liberals like Lincoln, right? Lincoln was a big government guy who was reading Marx, who all of his cabinet loved Marx. Lincoln, Marx is cheering Lincoln on, right? So you guys have to start learning about civics. I know this isn't a Catholic strong point. You have to learn about civics. Big land masses, like a continent, a big landmass requires big Marxist, globalist, centralized planning and government. The only way you can do small government, which we all say we like, subsidiarity, is small land masses. Okay. Madison thought he countered this in Federalist Number 10. How can you be big and small government? His idea is faction, and he just gets brutalized by Brutus. So the real answer is, yes, we need to have our youth reading the Federalist Papers, but we need to have them reading the Anti-Federalist Papers, because they're going back and forth in the New York Gazette. But Brutus 4 and 5 respond to Federalist 10, and they're being published on different dates. Now we read the Federalist Papers like it's a book. It's not. It's a collection of chronologically progressing letters that were written by the pseudonym Publius, which was really Hamilton and Madison and a few from John Jay, and were being responded to by Cato, another one called the Federal Farmer. One was called like a Maryland Farmer. Brutus, Cato and Brutus are the best. And you can read a collection of the Federalist Papers, which are organized really well. You can also buy a book of the Anti-Federalist Papers. You have to say the Anti-Federalist won. The way that constitutional ratification was being pushed in between the summer of 1787 and the summer of 1788, when the individual states went to ratify, all 13 of them had the idea of ratifying this new creature that they'd illegally supplanted the Articles of Confederation with the previous summer. Now the 13 states in the summer of 1788 are all ratifying up or down on it. And in June, because they don't have social media, a bunch of the most important states in the Union are deciding on it. They had to reach a quorum of 9 states out of 13 to have a country. The Anti-Federalists are saying, don't do it yet. We need a Bill of Rights first. Or some of the more extreme ones are like, we should just be 13 separate countries, which is, I think, the best idea at this point. Some of the less extreme ones were saying we should be 4 separate countries, so they're slightly larger. The more moderate Anti-Federalists were just like, wait till we get a Bill of Rights first. That was a very close vote in the most important state, Virginia. Virginia was by far the most powerful state in the Union, had 4 of the 5 presidents were from there, the first 5 presidents anyway, and it was a very close vote. It was an 88-80 vote, finally, on do we ratify as Virginia, the muscle in the Union. The South was the muscle in the Union through the Civil War, after the Civil War. Lots of people don't know that. Do we vote to ratify the Constitution before we give this Bill of Rights? Because we know what's going to happen. We're the anti-federalists. We're the true small government people. The federal government is going to start growing into this leviathan that sticks its nose in everything, becomes like a tyrant like Lincoln or FDR or LBJ or Wilson right away, slowly. And they lost by a very narrow vote. And shortly thereafter, we got a Bill of Rights. The Federalists did make good on a promise three summers later to get a Bill of Rights, which Madison authored. And Madison swung in the 1790s after the Constitution was ratified more toward the anti-Federalists. Madison also was a Virginian. He swung back to his anti-Federalist friends who they'd all been educated by a classicist who taught him Greek named John Wythe in Virginia. All of these guys that were future presidents and the friends of future presidents, they're all Virginian. Most important state. Madison was more with the northerly kind of big government federalist types during a ratification contest between summer of 1787 and 1788.
There's a super chat question from Uncle Bobby B. Recommended books for the Civil War discussion?
The books I would recommend are the first book I'd recommend that anyone reads on this general topic that's more important than Civil War books, because there's so much just claptrap, coffee clatch about the Civil War, is Bernard Bailyn's award-winning book called The Ideological Origins of the American Revolution. That's really, really important. He pitches that the anti-federalists were the ones that kept the American faith. The anti-federalists, not the federalists. The federalists are switching out the small government Articles of Confederation, which left the power with the states, to it was too energetic a change, too much energy in the central government in this new constitution. That was the position of the anti-federalists. And Bernard Bailyn shows why the anti-federalists are the ones who kept the faith. The Ideological Origins of the American Revolution is one of the top seven most important books I've ever read. And people need to read it. Also, in terms of what happened after the Civil War, between the Civil War and the Warren Court, the most important book I've ever read is a book by another legal scholar called Philip Hamburger, which is a hilarious name. We say he should have written the biography for Felix Frankfurter, the jurist. Yeah, it's called Separation of Church and State, and it will red pill you on the First Amendment and why the First Amendment was so strongly religious until incorporation doctrine of the 14th Amendment. First Amendment established the right of all 13 states to have a little religious established, an establishment of religion in the state. The First Amendment says Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, meant that the state governments, who were more important back then and should be now, could have an official state religion. And guess what? Eight of the 13 states did. That means we could have a state religion of Catholicism in one of the states under the original Constitution before it was perverted and destroyed by those like Lincoln, FDR, Wilson, LBJ. You know, what happened after the Civil War to this country is a real tragedy. And again, slavery is a moral evil, not as much moral evil as abortion, but a definite moral evil. You can't support it. But to say, look, the Confederacy had subsidiarity right, the way government ought to work, localism, correct, even though they did it, you know, they supported one evil thing, is kind of like saying, look, nowadays there's still some right-minded Americanism, American political philosophy, even though we have abortion federalized. It's illegal for abortion to be illegal. Does the Confederate flag represent only slavery? No. Does the American flag represent only abortion now? No. We can say these are two grave evils, slavery and abortion. But you could still salute an American flag. The Confederate flag still represents the ideas of the anti-federalists from 80 years before. The ideas of smaller government that I think are clearly right and should have won out. That doesn't mean you like every bad that goes with it. You guys need to rethink. I mean, you need to get educated on the Constitution, and then all of a sudden you'll think differently about the Civil War. And maybe I can do some of that here. Okay. Thanks a lot. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your watching. If you want to support the show, we're getting lots of attacks. The Case for Patriarchy book is set to come out in a month's time now. Pre-order it today on Sophia Press, Sophia Institute Press, or on Amazon. And the attacks are coming because of this book. Doxing. We've had a run-in, you know, that I was involved in with Antifa in Atlanta now. The attacks are coming. If you want to support me, go to Timothy J. Gordon on Patreon. I could use it, and I appreciate your help. And I'm going to do a class on I'm going to do a show on Lincoln very soon, and how it affects us today, and how Catholics are pretty brainwashed on this issue. God bless you all. Deus vult.